and relationships. And all month long, they have been submitting questions. And Michael, the deal we made was, if you do the Q&A, I will come and do a Sunday. So he got to talk to all the youth about all the questions that they have. And I get to hang out with you guys, which is great for me. Worked out really good. So we're gonna start this morning like we always do. We're going to start with a question. Have you ever had to put something together? Like a shed for your backyard or a Lego set or a bookshelf, something like that. And have you ever started to put something together and this happened? The instructions were bad. I don't know if you guys have started to experience this, but sometimes when I'm putting together bookshelves, we're a homeschool family, so we have like 1,000 books and more bookshelves than we know what to do with. And when I'm putting those bookshelves together, a lot of times the instructions are coming with just pictures. There are no more words in them, and I'm a words person, and pictures confuse me. So when I'm looking at them and I'm putting things together, I get to the point where usually I have made some kind of mistake. And I am looking for, in the instructions, I start to look for the troubleshooting guide. The part of the instructions that say, hey, so you've messed up, what do you do now? But what I've learned is when you nail a bookshelf backwards, there's really no troubleshooting that. So my biggest problem is the trouble that they're shooting is never the trouble that I am having. Their frequently asked questions are not my frequently asked questions. The things that they are fixing are not the things that I've broken. It's a great time. So what we've been talking about last week and this week is we've started a new series called Assembly Required. And the subtitle here is, or something that may require reassembly. Because what we've learned is we are really good at starting relationships. We are really good at maintaining relationships. But as soon as there is a fracture or a break, and we feel like we've lost that connection with someone, we often don't know what to do. And one of the things that we've learned is fixing relationships is a learned skill. These are things that were modeled for us by our parents, our grandparents, the people in our lives. We watched them try to navigate broken relationships. And most of the time, we learned ways that maybe aren't as helpful. We watched our parents kind of give each other the silent treatment, or some of us watched our parents fight and scream, or grandparents, or whoever. But what we've learned is the way that we've learned how to fix relationships leads us doing this. What we reach for first often makes things worse. The tools that we use, the things that we reach for to try and fix a broken relationship, usually end up making it feel a little bit more tense and worse. And the things that we use a lot, we call them the four C's. They are convince, convict, coerce, control. Okay? These are the tools that we instinctively reach to try to get people to come back at us, which makes no sense. Because they don't work on us. But we grab them anyway and we try to use them because we are crazy. We are absolutely crazy because we're reaching for things that we don't like that people do to us. But we end up feeling crazy because the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over but expecting a different result. And we are constantly reaching for convince, convict, coerce, control. Now, you probably have one that you kind of lean towards when you're trying to talk to someone and build a bridge that relationship. My personal one is I like to convince people. I like to talk and talk and talk and talk and talk until the other person, usually my husband, the other person is looking at me and is like, if you will just stop talking, I will do whatever you say. Just stop saying words. And I love to try to convince people because in the back of my mind, I am right and you were wrong and I just need you to realize that. Okay. So that's mine. That's me being brutally honest with you. Sometimes though, other people will grab for convict. And convict is like, that's the shame and blame one. That's the one where you're trying to make someone feel guilty for the choices they've made. And that's when you're like, how could you? How could you do this to me? How could you do this to yourself? And what you're trying to do is pull that emotional response from them and get them to realize that, you know, man, what they did was really, really wrong. But we go about it in the wrong way. And when we use convince, convict, coerce, control, what that other person feels is not what we were hoping. What they feel is rejection. They don't feel seen. They don't feel loved. They don't feel like you heard them. What they feel is that you have rejected them. And the thing that is kryptonite to all of our relationships, rejection is kryptonite even when you are right. Convincing, convicting, coercing, and controlling someone will always feel like rejection. And I mean, what do we all want? I mean, it's the same thing that you guys want. We want to feel seen and loved and heard without an agenda. We don't want the other person trying to have an agenda for us and telling us what to do. And we know these things. And that's part of what makes what we do sometimes so crazy, is we know what we're supposed to do, but we're often reaching in our little bag of tricks and we're pulling out a hammer and we are trying to beat something apart when maybe what we should have grabbed was some wood glue, like, and trying to glue the pieces back together. And we often reach for the wrong tools. And I mean, like, the good part is that most of the people in the world, we don't like living with that tension. We don't like feeling that there's something between us, or that someone's mad at us, or we're mad at someone. So we don't like living with the tension. And so we want to resolve it, right? That's the good thing. We want to resolve the tension. But what it comes down to is we are only as happy as our core relationships are healthy. So that means that the people that we are closest to, we are only as happy as those relationships are healthy. It's the happiness factor. So if you're in a fight with your best friend, you're not as happy as you usually are. If you and your spouse are in a disagreement over how to best raise a child in a certain situation, you're not as happy as you usually are. Or, I work with teens. You know, if you have a parent who's coming down on you and they're convicting or convincing you of something, you're not as happy as you usually are, because you're only as happy as your core relationships are healthy. Now, when there's a break in those relationships, that starts to affect us physically, mentally, emotionally. We start to feel those disconnect in all of those different ways. And a lot of us in the room, a lot of us have counselors that we talk to. I have a counselor that I talk to. And I have never once met with my counselor and started sharing all of my problems with her and her look at me and say, "Girl, your problems stem from your healthy relationships with your parents and siblings. Your relationships are too healthy. That's your problem." No one has ever said that to me, because that's ridiculous. Because good, healthy relationships don't hurt physically, mentally, and emotionally. So what we're trying to figure out in this series is, what do we do when those relationships are broken, but we want reconciliation? We want things to come back together. We talked last week that our goal cannot be reconciliation. Our goal is no regrets. Our hope and our prayer is reconciliation. We don't want the tension. We want the path to be clear. We want obstacles removed. We want to get back to where we were. But that can't be our goal, because we can't set a goal for another adult. Our goal, though, is no regrets. Our goal is to know we did everything in our power to keep the door open, the welcome mat out, to remove every obstacle so that we can get back to that relationship with someone. But when we don't know how to do that, and we're sitting with those emotions, and you're going, "Okay, well, if I can't control them anymore and I can't try to convince them of anything anymore, I will just decide I'm not going to do those things." We call these are not decisions. We call these are decisions you are making to not do something anymore. "I'm not going to convince them. I'm not going to control them. I'm not going to do these things. You know, Ashley, if you're telling me these are bad, all right, I just won't do them." But the problem with not decisions is you're focusing so hard on what you're not going to do that you don't replace that behavior with something else. You are so focused on, "I am not going to control you anymore. I'm not going to control that person. I'm going to let them do their thing." But you're so focused on it that you start to feel those emotions build up. You watch them do something stupid, and you know they're doing something stupid. You're like, "I'm not going to control you. I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to do it." And you start, like inside, you're like a shaken soda. And then eventually you get shaken so much that you end up exploding all over the person that you were trying not to control anymore. And that can make it worse. So what we want to do is we want to take those things that we're not supposed to do, convince, convict, coerce, control, and replace them with something else. Okay? So if you are here today because someone invited you and you're maybe not a Christian, you're just here because you heard there was free donuts, and who doesn't love a free donut? What we're going to talk about today, some of this might just be really good tips. They might be good advice. It might be things that you're like, I could go home and try that. Maybe that might work. But if you're here and you are a follower of Jesus and you are someone who said, yeah, I want to model my relationships after Jesus and I want to do what he said, I want to love God and love others and love myself, then what we're talking about today is non-negotiable. These are things that we absolutely have to do because of this sentence right here. In your relationships with one another, have the same mindset as Christ Jesus. This means when we're in a relationship with someone, we want to treat them the way that Christ would treat them. We want to see them the way that God sees them, feel towards them what God is feeling. And what that looks like is that it means in a broken relationship, reassembly begins with us, regardless of who initiated the fuss. And now, I mean, this is cute and it's all rhymey and we like our little Dr. Seuss sayings around here. But what it means is it means no matter who started it, no matter who started the argument, no matter who made the mistake, even if I am 100% the injured party and I didn't do anything wrong, reassembly begins with us regardless of who started it. And this is where a lot of us will cross our arms and we'll be like, you don't know what they did to me. Right? I'm the one that got hurt. You don't understand what they did to me. Why is this my job? To fix what's between us when I didn't do anything wrong. And so what we decide we're just going, maybe you even forgave them. I forgave them, but I don't want anything to do with them. I'm done. And what happens is you kind of just stand there and wait. You know, you've forgiven them and maybe you're open to a relationship, but you don't want to do anything about it. Means we're kind of more like them than we're willing to admit, because they're on the other side of the disagreement, probably thinking the same thing. So if we want to start the process of treating someone the way that Jesus would treat them, to have the mindset of Christ, this is our goal for this week. Our goal this week is I will get back to them, not get back at them. Now, the Apostle Paul is going to kind of explain what all of this means for us. And we're going to read the letter that he wrote to the people living in Rome. And if you read his letter called Romans, these people were fighting. I mean, he is writing a letter to people who were having a lot of conflict, a lot of disagreements with each other. They were not living happily. And the interesting part is, as far as historians can tell, Paul hadn't made it to Rome yet. He had not met these people. He did not know what their fights were about. He didn't know what they were in conflict about. But what Paul was saying is it kind of doesn't matter, because if this is how we're supposed to treat people, then it really doesn't matter a whole lot what happened. And Paul's going to get into that. And the question that he's answering is how do we embrace the mind of Christ in our relationships, even if they are fractured or broken? So he starts to answer that question by saying, your love must be sincere. And if you look up sincere in the original Greek, what it means is like it has to be genuine, or it has to be without hypocrisy. So one of the things that I like to do is I'll look at a verse like this and I'll read it in a couple of different Bible versions. My favorite one is actually, it's the New Living Translation, where it says, don't pretend to love others, really love them. And how many Christians have you talked to before where they're like, I absolutely love God and I love others, but then you look at their relationships with some other people and you're like, do you though? Do you though? Because the words that you're saying and the actions that you're having are saying that what you're saying and what you're doing are two different things. Paul says the love of Christ can't be faked. You can't paint on a smile and pretend to love someone. And this is last week, Michael talked about the dance. This is where you see someone and you don't like them. And, you know, I'm a girl, and I've done this before. You know, you see someone, you don't like them, and your voice jumps a couple octaves, and you're like, hey, girl! And you're really, you know you're fake. That person knows you're fake because she's faking it right at you. Oh, I love you too! And you go up, and you're giving them a hug, or I'm not a dude, but I've seen dudes do this where, you know, like, you know, they're not getting along, so they do the handshake and, like, the opposite shoulder bump. You know, but what happens is, whether you're a guy or a girl, you go in to hug them or whatever, and your face, once it's behind their back, you're like, oh my God. And then, oh, I love you so much. I'll see you next Christmas, right? That's the type of love that is not sincere, that is not genuine. And if we want that hope of reconciliation, the love that we have for them has to be genuine. We have to see those people, that person, the way that God sees them, in order for us to love them like God does. And the next thing Paul helps us figure out is a huge problem that I know a lot of small groups have talked about. I know some of you have struggled with personally, is what do you do when someone who's hurt you, it wasn't accidental. It wasn't unintentional. What someone did to you was malicious, maybe it was violent, and maybe they did it on purpose. And when you have those relationships, you know, what do you do then? This is what Paul tells us. Paul tells us to hate what is evil, but to cling to what is good. The good news here is that it's okay to hate. It is okay if someone has hurt you or offended you, especially if it was intentional or malicious. It is okay to hate, but what we have to do is change what you hate. We want to reallocate your hate, because we want to change it from hating the person to hating the evil that happened between you. We want to change what you're hating. Now, we don't like to use the word hate most of the time. Hate makes us feel small. It makes us feel petty. So what a lot of people will do is they'll, I don't hate them. I just strongly dislike them, right? I don't hate. I just throw up in my mouth a little when I see them. I just strongly dislike who they are as a human and would be okay if I never saw them again, right? But if you're being honest, deep, deep down in your heart, you know, I kind of hate him, okay? But Paul says what we need to do is reallocate your hate from the who to the what happened between you. I'm not going to hate the person. I'm going to hate the evil that happened between us. And once you can start to do that, Paul would say, now you're starting to remove those obstacles that are between you and the other person. Now you're starting to move forward. But what we don't want to make this a not decision. I don't want to tell you just don't hate, because we just talked about if you don't replace that behavior with something else, then you're just focused on I don't hate you. Paul tells us what to do instead, which is the important part. Paul says, be devoted to one another in love. Honor one another above yourselves. So we're not going to hate the person. We're going to hate what happened. We're actually going to try to love that other person. And we're going to try to honor them. And honor is a tricky word. It's not something we talk a lot about. But what honor means I'm going to put you first. I'm going to put you ahead of me. You talk first, your words first, your thoughts first, your emotions first. I'm not going to try and convince you anymore. I'm going to love you. I'm not going to try and control you anymore. I'm going to try to hear you, to understand you, because I honor you and I'm going to put you before me. My pride and ego have to get set aside in order for me to honor someone else and love them in that way. Then the next thing Paul says is we are going to bless those who persecute you, bless and do not curse them. Most people here, we have never been persecuted just because of who we are as a people, just who we are inside. But what Paul is saying here is this is how proactive he wants us to be. He wants us to bless someone, even if they are cursing us. This means we when we're talking about that person, we should commend them. When we're talking to someone else about them, we should praise them and say good things about them. We shouldn't talk about them maybe the way that they've talked about us. We shouldn't glare at them the way that they glare at us. The words and actions that we have should be blessings on them. And the reason this is so hard is it's because the exact opposite of maybe what we were taught, or the exact opposite of what we want to do. Because what we want to do is fight fire with fire. We want a dig for a dig, an insult for an insult. And someone comes at you and they're maybe like angry, they're at like a level 3. We're like, that's fine, you're going to come at a 4. They come back at a 5 and you're climbing this ladder of anger and frustration until you're both just exploding because you're trying to convince and convict and control each other. But that's not what we're supposed to do. What Paul is saying is to have the mind of Christ, what we have to do is bless them. And the reason we would consider that is because that's how God treats us. And what this feels like is it feels like God, like Paul, when he's writing this, is putting all of the responsibility on me. And he is, because regardless of who initiated it, it's our job to clear the path as much as we can. Paul says this is how we're supposed to treat those who are being just horrible to us. We're going to try to bless them. Okay, take a breath. This stuff is really, really hard to do, especially when someone has hurt you or someone has come at you. So I'm kind of watching, some of your shoulders are coming up and you're taking this really like defensive position and you're like, I don't want to do that. Take a breath. Take a breath. Shake it out. This is hard, but we can do these things. And the next thing that Paul tells us is one of the hardest things. This is one of the hardest things, at least for me personally. This is hard for me to do. Paul tells us to rejoice with those who rejoice and mourn with those who mourn. Now, if we like the person, this is super easy. Like, it is so easy to rejoice when it's your best friend who got a job promotion. It is so easy to rejoice when your brother and his wife finally get to have a baby. Or it's easy to mourn when it's your kid and they've lost a beloved pet. When you like the person, rejoicing and mourning with them is easy. When it gets hard is when you don't like them. And when you don't want good things for them. And when something happens and that person that you're in a disagreement with or that relationship is broken and something good happens to them, you kind of go, they don't deserve that. They don't deserve any of that. No one else knows what they did to me. They don't deserve that. Or sometimes when something bad happens to them, deep down inside, you're like, there it is. Now you're getting what you deserve. Now this is, something bad has happened to you, and quite honestly, I'm feeling pretty good about it. Paul is saying that's not how we treat people and have relationships like Christ would. If you find yourself in that position of waiting for karma to kind of like come around and bite them, Paul is saying this is a place that we can work. This is a point where God is saying, we can work on this. Because it feels like tension. And that tension, we have to pay attention to the tension. And that's something we have access to. It's something we can work on. It's a place where God is saying, let's work on this together. And then Paul goes on and he says, live in harmony with one another and do not be proud. Pride will ignite the four C's. Pride will take my ability to convince someone and just light it on fire. I mean, that's where pride is, where I'm saying I'm right and you're wrong, so get in line, right? Pride is what gets between me and the relationship of the person that I'm having. Pride will ignite when you're convincing, convicting, coercing, and controlling someone. Pride will fracture a relationship, or if it's fractured, pride can break it completely. And then finally, Paul says this, Do not repay anyone evil for evil. And again, I know some of you in the back of your head, you're like, Ashley, you don't know my story. You don't know what they did to me and how much it hurt. But Paul is saying, to an extent, it doesn't matter, because how we act doesn't change. How we talk to people doesn't change. How we treat people doesn't change. Now, we love the word repay, right? That's that karma part, where if someone hurt us, now it's time to repay them for what they did to us. This is how we get even. And this is where, in your story, in your relationship, maybe you even feel justified in doing this. You're going to get back at them. This is the part of our nature where Paul is saying, this is a part where we can be a little bit more like Jesus. This is the part where God is saying, there is a better way to treat people. Because one of the things we say around here is following Jesus should make your life better and make you better at life. And if that's what we're aiming for, we don't want to get back at. What we want to do is get back to them. We aren't going to get back at them, we'll get back to them. And the reason we would do that is because it is what God did for us. So in order to fix those broken relationships, this is what we're doing. I will get back to, I won't get back at. And what's so important about this decision is it's looking at the other person and saying, I'm no longer going to wish bad things for you. I'm no longer going to repay evil for evil. I'm no longer going to hate you. What I'm going to do is we're going to replace those, and I'm going to make an active effort to get back to you, to get back to our relationship. I'm not going to wait. I'm going to actively make decisions to try and clear the path from me to you. And what happens is when we think this way, it ensures that we don't go halfway and stop. Halfway looks like, you know, I forgave you, but I'm not going to do anything about this. I'm just going to stand here until you meet my demands, or you apologize, or you do something that I told you to do. Halfway means you've forgiven. But if you're forgiven and waiting, that's still getting back at them. And the thing about that is, God didn't stop with forgiveness with us. God didn't stop with his son dying on a cross and then waiting around for us to come back to him. He's not some angry deity in the sky, just standing there with his arms crossed, waiting for us to crawl back to him. No. God is constantly with us. He is constantly pursuing us. He is constantly next to us because he is trying to draw us back to him. Because God's forgiveness paved the way for a repaired relationship. The things that we have done should have separated and severed our relationship with God. But that's not what he wants for us, and it's not what he wants for us with other people. He wants us close to him, and that is our model. God moved first. And that's why we celebrate. Easter is in 3 weeks. That is the biggest part of why we're celebrating Easter, is God moved first to bridge the relationship between us. And God said, I am all of those sins, those unwise choices, all of those things that we have done that separated us from God. Easter is that moment where we celebrate that God took all of that and said, no more. We are pushing all of those out of the way. I'm no longer going to separate myself from you. God is constantly with us. And that is our example. That is our model for how we fix broken relationships. Because you can forgive at a distance, but you can't repair from a distance. And that's why our goal this week is, I will get back to, not get back at them. Now, there's all of last week, and again today, I'm sure there's a person or a group of people that you're thinking about that you're like, yeah, that there's a specific relationship that I've got in mind, because there's a hurt there, there's a tension there. And what I'm going to do next is I'm going to teach you guys a prayer to help you start that journey back to them, to help you start to remove those obstacles so you can at least have the pathway open. Now, when we do this prayer, if you feel a tension there, it might mean that you haven't forgiven as deeply as you thought you did. Because with some hurts and some people and some relationships, there are layers of forgiveness. So if I pray this prayer and you kind of feel a little uncomfortable, pay attention, because there might be a little bit more forgiveness that we need to find for that person. So here's that prayer. Heavenly Father, help me see him the way you do. Help me feel towards her what you feel towards her. When that person comes to mind, help me see them the way that you see them. Because that person is also a child of God, and God sees them as one of the children that he loves. And God feels love towards that person. And if we can start to pray this prayer and see them how God sees them and love them how God loves them, then we are starting to remove those obstacles. Because as much as God is on your side, especially if you're the injured party, as much as God is with you, he is also on the other side of that disagreement with that person too. And we forget that a lot. We forget that as much as God loves us, he loves that person too. And sometimes we start to think, well, you know, oh, I hate that person. You know, God hates them too. No. God doesn't hate them. God hates what happened. God hates the brokenness in our relationship, but he does not hate that person. He loves them just as much as he loves you. And that is often the biggest disconnect, is we forget how God sees them. And we forget how God feels towards them. And this prayer is how you start that journey back to them. When you can see that person the way God sees them and feel towards them what God feels towards them, you are starting the journey and you're saying, I will get back to, I will not get back at. And this is the part where, I mean, just imagine what that would look like in this relationship. What that would look like if you're no longer holding on to anger. And you can let that go and just start to feel peace. I mean, imagine if instead of being angry and hating that person, you can hate what happened. But if you could start to love that person, if you could start to feel towards them what God feels, man, like what that could do just in your own life, in your own heart, to just let go of all of that. And maybe we're not there yet, but that's what the prayer is for, to help us start that journey back towards opening those doors and creating that relationship. So that's what I want to pray for all of us today, is that we can start finding our way back to. So let's go ahead and pray. If you guys could stand with me, let's pray together that we can start to figure out how to do that. Oh, Heavenly Father, help us to make the hard decisions. Help us to start to find the ways that we can get back to you, get back to that person, not to get back at them. Help us find our way to them. And it's hard not to repay evil for evil. And it's hard to see them the way you see them. But God, that's what we're asking your help for. We want to see that person the way that you see them. We want to see them as another one of your children. And God, we want to feel towards them what you feel towards them. We want to love them sincerely. And we want to honor them above ourselves. And we want to rejoice when they're rejoicing. Help us, Lord, to clear all the obstacles. Help us to get to the point where we have no regrets about that we have done everything we could to clear the path and clear the obstacles and do what we can to get back to that person, because that is what you did for us. You did everything you could to get back to us. Let you be our model. And help us to get back to them.